teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line, being joined by Mike Golic Jr., works for DraftKings. Mike, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees. National championship game coming up on Monday, Georgia, TCU. Me being a representative of what will be the new Big 12, I have a rooting interest here. Does TCU have any chance Monday against the Bulldogs of Georgia?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think they've got some chance, right? Clearly, we learned any notion of what people wanted to say about TCU not belonging or TCU not being physical enough, which, if you watch this TCU team for any portion of this season, you knew wasn't the case, but this is the college football playoff semis. This is a bigger audience and an audience that may not have dove into the Big 12 play during the course of this season. Those notions got thrown out the window with what they did to Michigan. So, yes, they have a chance. They've managed to find a way in close games and adverse circumstances in a variety of ways all season long, but it is going to be an uphill battle because this Georgia team is a very different challenge than what they faced in Michigan in a lot of ways.
Do you think that it was a wake-up call, Mike, the way that they had to, Georgia had to like get it together quickly and then put the pedal down late? I thought it was interesting, and I give Kirby Smart a lot of credit for the fact that he was critical of his quarterback. Everybody was anointing him the hero in Stetson Bennett, and he was basically saying, our quarterback's got to play better, and he's got to do the things that we're telling him to do. And I think that Georgia still has another level they can get to. I think, I don't want to say, but in some ways, they were lucky to get out of that game alive to be where they are now. But they do have to change some things to try and even worry about what the spread is and a double, trying to win this game by double digits, let alone win it in outright.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you look at their last two games, really, going back to the SEC championship against LSU, their defense has also given up a lot of yards against these offenses. And we know one thing, TCU can score points. Garrett Riley and that offense can stress you in a lot of ways, and we saw that against a very good Michigan defense this last weekend also. But, yeah, I sort of joke that for three quarters he was Stetson, and for the fourth quarter he was SB4. Like, he turned on the juice. Yep. He tapped into some of that national championship super serum reserve, and he went out there and he really elevated that team in the fourth quarter with some big plays where he was sensational pushing the ball down the field. But, yeah, there was plenty to clean up for that game from Georgia. It's a very different challenge, and I think they got stressed on the back end. We knew that Ohio State had elite NFL-level skill talent, quarterback and C.J. Stroud, who played by far his best game of the season, especially being able to affect the game on the ground with his legs, which is something that Max Duggan can do for TCU. And so, yeah, I think coming off the SEC championship and that game, Kirby Smart's got more than enough ammunition to walk into the room with the defending champions and say, hey, listen, you guys aren't performing up to the standard that we have set around here, and we've seen from the Nick Saban teams over the years. That's a powerful thing to have that much motivation for a team that talented.
Mike Golic Jr., DraftKings, joining us on the HR&P guest line. You mentioned a couple names that I wanted to talk about. First off, Garrett Riley, the OC at TCU. He's going to be a hot name very, very soon in the college game. He's going to get a head coaching job somewhere very soon. And then Max Duggan, Hacksaw, Max Duggan, as I like to call him. What kind of game does he have to have? What does TCU have to put together against that staunch Georgia defense?
Yeah, so Max has to do what he's done all year, which is to leave it all out there. Like, we've seen him get the comparisons to Ginger, like a Ginger right-handed Tebow. And I think that's less in their game, although Max affects the game in ways like a runner, not as well as Tim did by any stretch. He may be a slightly better passer than Tim was in certain regards, but it's about the effort. We saw him in the Big 12 championship game gasping for air on the sideline as he barreled his way down the field and trying to make things happen. We saw him, as a part of their running game against Michigan, really put stress on the edge of that Michigan defense as Garrett Riley formationed them to get to the same simple set of plays they had. They really run zone read and a little bit of counter, and not a ton else on the ground game that you really have to be prepared for, but it's all the formations and everything you get, and then Max's toughness and ability as a runner and to deliver clutch time throws to the variety of weapons they've got in that receiver room. It's led by Quentin Johnston, right? He's the field bender. He's the guy that changes the math on all those things. But Max has to go out there and do what he's done all year, be incredibly tough and reliable in the run game, take good care of the football, and then be able to deliver those couple of clutch strikes like we saw him falling away, getting those balls to Quentin Johnston and letting this offense make the big plays that have been there for them all season.
Mike, I'm curious because you mentioned C.J. Stroud. And obviously here in Houston, we have nothing to really focus on from a professional football focus. So we're watching college football very, very closely with the number one pick well within their sights. C.J. Stroud was the guy at the start of the year everybody talked about as being the best quarterback coming out, best quarterback in college football. That kind of opinion fell off, and obviously Bryce Young has been right there at the top, and now he's at the top again. What you saw in C.J. Stroud, how does that translate to the NFL? Can you see a path where he becomes, again, the number one quarterback on the board for the draft this year?
Yeah, he made himself a lot of money with that performance, because with Bryce Young, the conversation is going to be all about size.
Yep,
he's an outlier, you know, in the range of size we usually see. In the NFL, the reason we've got the combine and all this stuff is because you've got a parameter at every position the teams operate with that is safe for them to justify to their bosses. Hey, this guy, we can coach him to a certain level because he's got these physical tools already. Bryce Young has got the production. He's got a bunch of good stuff from the neck up, and he's got a live arm, but he's just so small that you worry, and I'm sure the conversation will be about durability at the next level. Some of the things that we've seen pop up with Tua as a smaller quarterback in the NFL, but for CJ, a little bit bigger, still not the biggest frame in the world, but taller. And he's got the thing that I think when you're picking at the top of the draft, especially now, because we've got so many accomplished quarterbacks who are also mobile, you need a guy that's going to be able to get you out of some trouble. Obviously, in Houston, we've heard all the conversation. Laremy Tunsil wants to be the highest paid tackle in pro football. You've got a great anchor on that left side. But for the rest of it here, you've got a roster where, yeah, you know what, young talent on defense, but getting there on offense, running back you can trust. You want a quarterback that's going to be able to get you out of some trouble. And C.J. Stroud showed, really, in the first major way all year, that, yeah, he can make plays off script. He can be a factor with his legs in the running game and get you some free yards there. I think he had over 60 yards rushing on scrambles and a couple of designed runs in this game. And so I think those are the things of a modern top pick that you need to see, someone that's going to be able to bail you out of a little bit of trouble in addition to all the gifts that we know he has with his arm.
Yeah, he hadn't really shown that a whole lot during the regular season, so putting that on display against one of the best defenses in the country, like you said, made him a lot of money. It's Mike Golic Jr. on our HRMP guest line. A couple of the other names at the top of the draft from the quarterback prospect point of view. Will Levis, who Mel Kiper has number one on his draft board. Jeremy Branham, who's an expert in the game, has him number one on his draft board, too. And then Anthony Richardson out of Florida, who's a project, completing 55% of your passes in the college game, isn't going to do a lot of favors, but Josh Allen didn't really do that at Wyoming either. I'm curious how much you've seen out of both of those SEC quarterbacks, Richardson at Florida and Levis at Kentucky.
Yeah, so Levis is a really interesting one because you want to talk about a guy that physically has every bit of the tools, right? He was, and I remember talking to Dan Orlovsky about this over at ESPN, he was an athlete before he was a quarterback when he came over from Penn State, and then he wound up in Liam Cohen's offense. We know it took a step back this year when Liam left, but both coordinators that he's played for at Kentucky now are guys that come out of that sort of Shanahan-McVay coaching tree in the NFL. That same style of, we're going to run a bunch of outside zone, we're going to move the pocket, we're going to use our quarterback's athleticism and arm. And Will's got a cannon for an arm. He's got a really quick release, and he's operated offenses that look familiar. If you're an NFL team, yeah, coaches do a better job of meeting players halfway with some of the college offenses, the RPO concepts. You can turn on the tape and see Will Levis operating in schemes that are familiar all across the NFL right now, and doing it with the size and ability he has, seeing the improvement that especially he made in the 2021 season, I think it's easy to see what people are going to like about Will Levis because it's just easier to see, period. You don't have to do any guesswork with that, and physically he meets all that. Anthony Richardson, I mean, my God, he is tailor-made for the hubris that exists in front office coaching staffs, which is, I can do better with this than you. There is otherworldly ability here. He's the most talented, not productive, but talented quarterback Florida's had since Cam Newton was in that quarterback room. I saw him week one of his college football season against Utah. We all thought he was going to win the Heisman. And when you saw those flashes, when you see him physically in person, I was down there with about 8 or 9 scouts who were all just looking and marveling at this massive humanity who is still early in his career. You mentioned Josh Allen. Josh at least had a super productive junior season. We know then his final year at Wyoming, a lot of his offensive weapons left, and that dipped, and that's where we started the journey with him. But for Anthony Richardson, you're going to have to commit to, hey, this probably isn't going to look perfect early on, But we believe we get him in a system, and with Billy Napier and company, I think he was more comfortable than he was the year before with Dan Mullen. A little more of the offense that Dan wanted to run, not as conducive to some of the things that Anthony Richardson can do for you physically with his gifts as a runner. But I'd imagine someone's going to be willing to take a first-round flyer on him and say, hey, we believe that this talent is so elite and that if we get him in the right system with a coach that we trust, you got to know your building. We can make something pretty special out of that guy, but he's going to be a back end of the first round kind of conversation.
Mike, before we let you go, I'm curious about Harbaugh and Michigan. He had a couple of trips where he got Michigan to the semifinals, and then it hasn't gone so well. Every year it seems like, and a lot of people think, he throws his own name into the hat for discussions for either job security or possibilities. What are the chances you think he stays at Michigan versus goes back to the NFL where he doesn't have to deal with NIL and all the extra, and he could just go back to doing what he did in San Francisco?
Yeah, I also think Jim Harbaugh, the one thing we hear, and Michigan fans aren't surprised by this. They've been hearing this every offseason for God knows how long. I mean, the guy interviewed with the Vikings on signing day last year. This man has no regard for human life, because that is the worst possible time as a college coach. You could give anyone an inkling that you might not be here for the job. And so I think it's a pretty good shot that he ends up leaving if he gets one of these job offers. I think the people doing that reporting at The Athletic are trustworthy. They've got roots in college football. This, I don't think is just smoke coming from the NFL. And I think the difference with Harbaugh, too, is as far as interest from the NFL level, is they've seen him do it there before. This isn't hiring a college coach like we saw Carolina try to do with Matt Rhule, who hasn't lived up on this level before. This is someone who has not only been here, but been as close to the mountaintop as you can get without summiting the damn thing, and has also been known as a program jump starter. And I think for the teams that we know are in the running for this right now, Carolina, hyper-aggressive owner and David Tepper, who doesn't want to have to wait long for this. The Indianapolis Colts with Jim Irsay, who's been taking big swings like we've seen with the Jeff Saturday hire. And then Denver, who is backed against the wall with Russell Wilson in their lap and nowhere else to put him, so someone's got to come in and manage. All of those programs need someone who's got the background that Jim Harbaugh does. And so I'd imagine he's going to have suitors, and I think that draw of trying to get back and win a Super Bowl at the highest level of competition for a guy that we know is an absolute voracious competitor is going to be too much for him to ignore.
Mike, great stuff as always. Really enjoyed the conversation. Hope to do it again very soon. Enjoy the national championship on Monday.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Mike Golic Jr. of DraftKings joining us on the HRNP guest line. Let's switch the conversation over to the Astros. John Morosi of MLB Network says the Astros have plans to work out long-term extensions with a certain players. We'll tell you those players, and if we had to pick one Astro to lock up long-term, who would it be? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
John Morosi of MLB Network says that Houston has plans to work out a long-term extension with Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, and has had conversations with Kyle Tucker as well. That's encouraging to hear, but my whole thing with reports is I hate hearing reports. Just tell me the news. We heard that the Astros were talking to Kyle Tucker early in the season last year. Nothing got done. We never heard that the Astros were talking to Yordan Alvarez. You know what we heard about the Astros and Alvarez? After. That a contract extension had been done. So reports mean absolutely nothing to me. But it does kind of bring up a question. If you could pick one, 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, you can pick one Astro to give a long-term extension to. And let's just assume that the salary's good relative to the position, right? Like, I don't want to get into the weeds and like dollars and cents. Let's just assume that for all of these guys, it's good for relative to their position. Good, healthy deal. We know it. Who would be the one player for you that you would give a long-term extension to?
Boy, I mean, it's dependent upon like when their contract is up.
Okay.
Because look, I mean, one of the obvious choices fans are going to say is Jeremy Pena. I mean, he's MVP of the World Series. He's MVP this, then the other thing. And I'm like, see, but you got him under control for quite a while. I'm not willing to jump on that bandwagon. I need to see him a little bit more for a couple more years to see that he's going to have the consistency. We thought Correa was going to be great, and then we didn't realize how many times Correa would be injured and have all these other things going on. So at the end of the day, they decided not to pay him. I don't feel it's time to put Pena in a conversation where I want to lock him up long term or do something like you did even with a Bregman. So I think that when I look at it, I have never been as big a Kyle Tucker fan as others. And I don't believe that Kyle Tucker, you and I think we're on the same page with this. I think when Kyle Tucker's contract's up, they're going to let him walk. Because if they could have locked him up for a Yordan-type deal, I think they would have done that. Because at the end of the day, it ends up still looking like a bargain based on what everybody's paying for big-time talent in Major League Baseball. But if it means that he's going to get above what Yordan is getting, and I think Yordan, head and shoulders across the board offensively, is a more dominant and impactful player, average, power, everything that he does, to where I think I can find another Kyle Tucker before I can find another Yordan Alvarez. I think you have to look at the pitching staff too. And to me, as much as Fromber has done, I'm still more in the camp right now of looking at a Christian Javier saying, I think there's more Christian Javier can do. I think his stuff is more dominant. I think as much as we saw maybe the best of Fromber a year ago, we know that sometimes he has a tough time dealing with high leverage situations and emotional moments. We've seen a calm, cool, collected Christian Javier that has unbelievable stuff.
Is it still fair to say that about Fromber?
About the emotional stuff?
Yeah,
I saw it in the playoffs. I saw it late in the year. It concerned me. I brought it up on the show with you when you needed a Maldi to kind of calm him down.
I think it concerns you, though, because it's his history. Like, if you go look at what he did in the postseason, his postseason was fantastic. Like, he was great. And it showed great improvement from where he was a year ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's fair anymore to continue to use that as, like, a knock on Fromber.
I think it's still a part of his overall makeup. I think that we saw it in the playoffs. We saw it where Maldi had to calm him down, and even still, there were times where it took a lot, whether it be the calls behind the plate.
But he was dominant. He was dominant this playoffs.
And I'm not taking that away from him, because I'm still at the end of the day saying if I'm going to lock up somebody, it's going to be one of those two guys. I think it's going to come down to Javier or Fromber, because I believe the pitching staff now is at a point where, at a certain point, as long as you can keep the majority of them together or the nucleus of the young pitching you have, you have a chance because that lineup's locked up and that lineup's really good.
See, I think you've named the four names that would be under consideration for me. And we're curious who it would be for you. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Brostash says Kyle Tucker, easy. Lemmy says Fromber. Valdez, degenerate gambler, says Machete. He wants Martin Maldonado long-term for the Houston Astros. It's a bit of a troll. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. That never happens, though. They never troll over on the Twitch channel. You mentioned the four guys that would be in consideration here. Jeremy Pena, Fromber Valdez, Christian Javier, Kyle Tucker for me. I'm with you on the Pena aspect of it. You still have 5 years of club control for Jeremy Pena. He's still 2 years away from arbitration. You don't need to do that yet. Now, if you could have those conversations if he did well next year, right? And now you're looking at a Wander Franco, you're looking at an Alex Bregman, you're looking at a Jose Altuve type of deal where you buy him out of arbitration, you give him a nice little raise now, and you buy out a couple of years in free agency. He's off that list for me, though, because it's still a little bit too early before I have those conversations with Jeremy Pena. So that leads me down to the three other guys, and I really don't know how realistic it is with these three other guys, because Fromber, Kyle Tucker, and Christian Javier are all about to enter arbitration. So they're going to see significant dollars, right? They're not going to be desperate like a Jeremy Pena who's on a league minimum deal to get locked up and have some security, like Yordan Alvarez was. Wanted to get locked up, wanted to have some security. I look at Fromber Valdez's age, and also one thing that's kind of like interesting whenever we have the Fromber, Tucker, Javier conversation, they are each under club control for the next 3 years. So you're not losing any of those guys sooner than the others. They're all locked up through 2025. You have them for 23, you have them for 24, you have them for 25. They're not going anywhere unless you trade them. Fromber's 29 years old. Fromber's already 29. So next year he'll be 30, 24 he'll be 31, 25 he'll be 32. I'm not really interested in locking up players into their mid-30s, no matter who they are. So Fromber Valdez, because of where he's at age-wise, 29, and I have him under club control through 2025 when he'll be 32 years old, I'm out of the Fromber Valdez conversation there because of his age. So that leaves you with Kyle Tucker and Christian Javier for me. Both of them are 26 years old. So they're both, you know, still have plenty of years to go. They're under club control through their 29 years old, but you can say you sign them for like a 6-year deal now that carries them to like 32, 33. So it's a tough conversation. Do I want to get rid of Kyle Tucker, who's my corner outfielder, very good, great defensive player, really good hitter, entering the prime of his career, or Christian Javier, who's part of the starting rotation, who's also entering the prime of his career, who just threw one of the most historic playoff performances in Major League Baseball history, still an underrated performance, and I can't believe it's as underrated as it is. what you pointed to is the reason that I go Christian Javier, because the strength of this ball club is the pitching rotation, and keeping the pitching rotation together is going to make them formidable and a playoff contender and a World Series contender as long as you keep this rotation together. You're looking at a long stretch, kind of like the Atlanta Braves, where if you put this rotation together, I don't care what your lineup is, you're going to be formidable. You're going to be a playoff contender. So it comes down to Tucker and Javier for me, because the strength of this ball club is pitching, because I think Christian Javier is going to be dominant over the next few years, and that's not to take away from Kyle Tucker. I give the slight edge to Christian Javier, and I also think Javier is more realistic than Kyle Tucker.
Well, I agree, and I think that I was focused on the pitching for that very reason. I also think that you can find another Kyle Tucker-esque type player in free agency if you need to.
Yeah,
maybe
not Tucker, but you can find a corner outfield bat as opposed to a dominant starting pitcher.
Exactly, and you're also, as long as you're going to be, and we're seeing this more now since we've gotten further away from the cheating scandal, more to focus on the success, a guy like Abreu saying in the playoffs, I watched this team and said, that's where I want to be. Mm-hmm. You're going to see more guys that are corner outfielders, which I don't want to say are a dime a dozen, but you can get an impactful corner outfielder in free agency. Finding aces and really good starting pitching is a lot tougher proposition, and the teams that get them try to lock them up and keep them. That's why you lock up and keep the guys you got. That's why I said it would come down to one of those two guys. I believe, and you factored in just an extra aspect of that, I believe with Fromber and his age, and with Javier, the fact that I still don't see a ceiling with him, because we haven't seen him through and through as the full starting pitcher. We just know how good his stuff has been. We know when he's been called on, he's been doing the job. But we also know that he looks like he can do it for a long time. So that's where I focus, because as long as you keep that pitching together, you're right, you can get a Glavin, Smoltz, Maddux, Steve Avery type deal, where as long as you got those guys in your rotation, those horses leading the way, everyone's going to want to jump on board.
Give me the starting pitcher over the corner outfielder. It's not to take away from Kyle Tucker. Uncle Barney disagrees, though. He says if it's 5 years plus, give me Kyle Tucker.
I don't think anybody's getting 5 years plus.
I don't know if I'm going to invite Uncle Barney over to next New Year's if he's disagreeing with
me. No more UFC for you, Barney.
Yeah, no more. 713-780-ESPN. Who's the one Astro that you would lock up? 713-780-3776. J.J. Watt left. He left the city. James Harden left. Hakeem Olajuwon left. Earl left. Nolan left. All the greats left.
Deshaun left, too.
I said the greats. Oh. Would you be okay if Jose Altuve ever left? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Before Jose Altuve leaves, if he ever does, I'd like to have a gin or bin with him. I don't know if Altuve likes the vodka. I don't know if he likes the gin. I don't know if he likes the bourbon, but I'll let him pick whatever of the three that he likes, and we'll share a drink together. Gentle Bin, of course, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative Presedo craft technology that's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in, most importantly, taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Bin, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Gentle Bin was very well-received. It was a favorite of the holidays. Try Gentle Bin compared to your brand. You're going to taste that huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Bin Spirits, had me out to the tasting room. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Bin man. It is smooth. It is clean. Eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Bin Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. And you can also find the bourbon at most Specs and Total Wines now as well. Total Wine also, the aisle caps, running a promotion here with Gentle Bin where you can find the Total Wine right there at the end of the aisles. So make sure you head over to Total Wine and get your Gentle Bin Vodka, get your Gentle Bin Gin, get your Gentle Bin Bourbon as well. And, of course, you can find it on the website at gentlebin.com. Are you going to a Rockets game soon? You can get Gentle Bin at every single bar in the Toyota Center. Also, make a trip to Section 125 for the Gentle Bin Bar and get your hands on that signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best Gentle Bin.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That threat you threw out there to Uncle Barney about taking away his UFC access, that does not sit well with Uncle Barney. He says,
why?
UFC was awesome, clap emoji, but pitchers are too fragile for more than 3 years. He says, Joel is the bomb, though. So now Uncle Barney's trying to be a little hip, which is always a dangerous place to be.
Fire. Straight fire, Barney.
He says Joel is the bomb.
I appreciate you.
I think he, does he like UFC more or does he like blankers more?
713-780. There's nothing wrong with that.
ESPN. All the greats leave at one point in time, right? Hakeem has left. Do we want to put James Harden in the conversation? He's left.
Yeah, Watt has left.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit
later.
Yeah,
we will.
But all the greats, for the most part, leave. Biggio, Bagwell, they didn't. But we see it now in sports where, I mean, even Jordan didn't play for the Bulls, right? There's a good chance that Jose Altuve, I shouldn't say good chance, there is a chance that Jose Altuve at some point will leave. Like, not in the distant future. He's still got 2 years on this deal. I think he's going to continue to play with the Astros after this two-year deal, but maybe he does an Akeem thing where he goes to play somewhere else for a year, or an Andre Johnson thing where he goes to bounce around with AFC South rivals like the Titans or the Colts for a year or two. Maybe he's chasing some numbers and the Astros just are ready to move on because, you know, they're still winning and they feel like they can upgrade. I mean, we're talking way down the road. But would you, as much as Jose Altuve is meant to this city, because I think we've kind of talked about the greatest athletes ever in the city, and I think with us, it always comes down to Olajuwon Altuve. They're 1A, they're 1B. They are the dudes. But even Olajuwon left, would you be okay, way distant, way down the road, Jose Altuve played baseball for another team?
Would I be okay with it? I think we always bring in the variables, right? I mean, if it's at a certain point where some team, say he hits free agency, or he's unhappy with his contract, and we know how staunch Jim Crane can be when with his money and making a tough decision. You mentioned the fact that Olajuwon, who will always and forever be known as a Rocket, played one unforgettable or more likely forgettable year with the Toronto Raptors because he was so pissed off at the organization that he said he wanted out. I think that was regrettable on his part more than the organization's part. But I think that it's part of business these days. And I think that you never say never in the fact that late in the career, unless you're Dirk Nowitzki and Kobe Bryant and a rare few that can say they played their whole career with one franchise, like Tim Duncan as well, it can happen. And it can happen because you can't fault the player if they get a big offer later in their career, which you know the franchise is grossly overpaying to get a name as opposed to the ability he once had. And from a team standpoint, if you have guys that are younger that are able to fill in and you know this just financially doesn't make sense anymore, we're going to love you. We're going to love you forever. We're going to make a statue outside the stadium for you one day and hang your number in the rafters. Uh-huh. But that doesn't mean we're going to make a dumb decision that hurts us for the upcoming baseball season.
Right. And look, Altuve signed one really friendly team deal where he won an MVP and was making like peanuts compared to good players around Major League Baseball. And then the Astros took care of him, signed him to a big long-term deal. But they did that way before he entered free agency. Like, the Astros are going to take care of Altuve, and I think Altuve's loyal to the city of Houston. We're talking 6, 7, 8 years down the road.
He wants to play. He loves it. Yeah. This is his second home. He wants to play his whole career.
If you put a gun to my head, I think Jose Altuve finishes his career with the Astros.
I agree.
But perhaps the Astros in 6 or 7 years are in a spot where Jose Altuve's just not performing anymore. Altuve's chasing, let's say, 3,500 hits because it's important to him, or just is in the best interest of both parties to go their separate way for a year or two. Can you live with that, being a sports fan in the city of Houston? I'm pretty good at separating like emotion from sport. I love Jose Altuve. Jose Altuve is my favorite player since Carlos Correa left, and I totally appreciate what he's done for our city, winning 2 World Series titles. Especially doing it in 2017 when the Astros, or the city of Houston rather, was going through tough times after Hurricane Harvey. Yep. Like that is why the heartstrings pull towards the Houston Astros, and he's come up in big moments. Maybe not this playoff, but he's come up in big moments throughout his postseason career. So I love Jose Altuve, but if you're talking 5, 6, 7 years down the road, the Astros have this hotshot second baseman coming up. They're still a playoff caliber team, and Jose Altuve's old and chasing 3,500 hits and is hitting 230.
3,500 or 3,000?
Either one. It doesn't matter for the sake of this conversation. That's probably another conversation we could have because he's still got some work to do to get to 3,000.
That's what I'm saying. I think 3,000 is the one that he'll be
probably
chasing.
It's probably. I was trying to do a favor for Altuve, I guess. But I can compartmentalize and separate the two. My love for Jose Altuve, but also being okay with if he left in the right situation, like Olajuwon went to Toronto. I remember Olajuwon in Toronto, but I don't put that like in my mind when I think of Olajuwon's career. Same thing with Andre Johnson. I know I saw him in a Colts uni. I saw him in a Titans uni, but I don't put those two things together. I remember Andre Johnson as a Houston Texan. So if the day ever came where Altuve was in a White Sox uniform, I could live with it. I really could.
Yeah, Emmett Smith wore a Cardinals uniform. You know, Brett Favre wore a Vikings and a Jets uniform, but he's forever known as a Packer. Like, you can go up and down with franchises and situations going there. There may always be a business decision to be made, and you mentioned one of them. We didn't know how hot shot of a hot shot shortstop you had coming up, but you were willing to pass on Carlos Correa, who in some people's minds was a legendary Astro that should be here for his whole career, no matter what his price tag is, and instead you decided to move on. If you can do it then, and this guy obviously has etched his name more deeply in stone in this city and with this franchise, but yet still it's just another example of, I can move on at some point from Altuve if it doesn't make dollars and cents.
Yeah. And to me, I think it's even going to come more to the wins than the dollars and the cents.
Like, and I'm talking cents like S-E-N-S-E.
Yeah, yeah. Then the dollars maybe. Because I feel like Click would be willing to overpay for Altuve if it didn't mean production on the field.
And it didn't cost his team.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I could see him overpaying dollars if Altuve was still, like, an average second baseman in baseball when he's 37, 38 years old. But if you're losing games because you're running Altuve out there because he's chasing down numbers, that's what I don't want to see.
You don't want to be in a short-term situation like Albert Pujols with the Angels or Miguel Cabrera with the Tigers, where you're hanging on to what he's been and letting him chase history while it's hurting you in the win column.
Like, yeah, 8240, Brandon T, I would be okay with it. He will always be known as an Astro. Prefer not to hold on to an older Altuve, which is pretty much where I'm at. If Altuve's 38, 39 years old, he's hitting 230, and he's just chasing numbers at that point. We love you, Altuve, and as soon as the moment you retire, we'll welcome you back into the Astro family.
And you're going into the Hall of Fame with an Astros hat on.
Oh, for sure.
Just you're not finishing your career with an Astros hat on.
It's the same thing as Hakeem Olajuwon. It's very similar to Andre Johnson. I think it's going to be very similar to J.J. Watt, who is going to play most of his career with the Texans, 2 years in Arizona, but will be forever remembered as a Texan, and I think he will be welcomed back into the Texans
Michael
family.
Jordan was a wizard, everybody.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the ultimate example.
0830, I think Altuve will be the only one who stays and ends his career with the Astros. He seems like too loyal of a guy to run off. See, that's kind of what we're saying, though. Like, this isn't going to be a decision because Altuve's disloyal. He will be loyal to the Astros. And this isn't a decision because the Astros are going to, like, screw over Altuve or run off Altuve.
But it's going to come down to the loyalty over ability. Because at a certain point, his abilities are going to erode. And the loyalty factor is going to come into the conversation. And don't think the agent isn't going to bring it up as well, no matter how much he loves the organization in the city, to try and get the extra dollars for his client.
Boris guy. 7888. I don't think Altuve plans on leaving. He's having a new house built in Houston right now. Do you think that influences a player leaving or not, that they're getting a new house built? Is that how real estate works, where if you have a house built, you have to stay in it for the rest of your career, for the next 5 years, for the next 10 years? Is that how the market works? I'm not that familiar with the market.
Not that familiar with it either.
No, I'm kidding. It's obviously not. Eric the driver, hell no, I wouldn't be okay with it, but I also don't worry about it. I think Jose understands that if he ever leaves, he'll never be appreciated or loved the way he is here. He's built his life in Houston. I see him taking a pay cut before he ever leaves. I agree with those things. Mm-hmm. But if he's 39 years old and the Astros have a hot shot second baseman coming up and there's just no longer room for Jose Altuve.
And he's a couple hundred hits or 100 hits back of 3,000.
Like Biggio. Biggio, but the Astros weren't a winning team at Biggio's. Like, that was the reason to come to the ballpark, was to see the last days of Craig Biggio. If the Astros were winning back then, would it have made sense to keep a Craig Biggio? I don't know.
This is another one of those things when we talk about what means more to you, the long-term success and continued success of your franchise, or overpaying, whether it be a guy in his prime or a guy at the end of his career, where it can actually hinder you in being able to maintain that winning culture and continue that long stretch of success. And if it comes down to those two things, I don't fault the Astros if they find a way to kind of shake hands and walk away.
Right.
So that they can continue to win.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be on bad terms. Not Santa, what are y'all talking about? Dream is a Raptor, all capital letters, 3 exclamation marks. That never happened. 2662, I'll give Altuve $25 million a year at 50 years old. Altuve is daddy. 713-780-ESPN. One of the former really good players in Houston that did leave, James Harden. More and more rumors saying that James Harden wants back. He wants to be a Houston Rocket. Look, I don't want Harden back.
I don't either.
But this is an example of why you take care of your stars. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
James Harden again. Oh, these little rumors to Houston are again circulating. We know how the Killer Bees feel. We do not want James Harden back in Houston. I saw a lot of people, well, the Rockets immediately get back to playoff contention if they bring back Harden.
No, they don't.
I think they might. I think they're a playoff team with Harden.
See, here's the thing. And this came up over the holiday, and we were off, too, and I was almost distraught with the fact that I couldn't dispel this quick enough. And then I thought I'd just sit back and watch and see the reactions, thinking everybody saw this like I did. A guy that no longer wanted to be here, that wanted to get out as quick as he possibly could to get to a better situation, but yet because the general manager catered to him and traded him where he wanted to go and said he wanted to be known as the player's GM, that suddenly the door should be opened up and he should be welcomed back. But then I saw it that it was like more and more of these bloggers and these red Kool-Aid drinkers going, I want James Harden back. Yeah, this dude could be the answer. He could be. What did you miss the first time around in the fact that James Harden only wants to be the franchise guy? James, someone said, text in, James would be great as a six man. He ain't taking that role. He's like the Carmelo Anthony of this generation. He wants to be the man. And if you want Jalen Green to be the man someday, if you think you've got two or three guys that can be franchise-type players, they're never going to get the chance to develop when they can't see the basketball because James Harden's got it in his hands for 19 seconds.
Yeah. See, I think they could be a playoff team next year. I'm talking about like 7-8 seed. I think that ultimately it would stunt the growth of your young players, and it's not the direction that the Houston Rockets have been trying to get to. And, like, we've heard some thoughts that perhaps the Rockets, with all their draft picks, with cap space, that they would bring in a high-salary player, not some dude who's going to be in his mid-30s for, like, the duration of whatever contract you give to him. And, like, the whole idea that he's not going to be like this star and he's willing to take a backseat to Jalen Green and Jabari, like, I don't see that happening. Does it make you better next year? I'll concede that it makes you better next year, but I think it stunts the overall growth of where ultimately this franchise wants to be.
Here's the other thing too, Jeremy. He's taken a step back in his abilities. If this was a conversation of James Harden in the heyday of his Rockets days when he was throwing up 50 pieces and 50 burgers every chance he got an opportunity, and he was an unstoppable force offensively, I could see a realistic conversation of him coming back and it making sense. When you look at what they have now and what he has now left in the tank as a player, it makes zero sense across the board. Because one, we both agree it'll stunt the growth of the youth on this team that could make you a really good team for a long period of time. But what they're really searching for right now are veterans that can help push the development of these kids and make the team better. Mm-hmm. James is not going to give Jalen Green the ball on the isolation on the wing because he believes he can still get the ball in his hands and do what he's done when he used to be a Rocket. He doesn't have those kind of abilities anymore. I don't care who he's dating and how much weight he's lost. He doesn't have the same abilities he once had. And every time he has the ball in his hands trying to do what he used to do, he's keeping the ball out of Kevin Porter Jr. and Şengün and Jabari and Green's hands to where you're not going to see any of these guys develop. Even Tari Eason, a guy that's going to be, you know, a key cog for you and who knows what he could develop into, he's going to be stunted by the fact that minutes are going to be a factor too, and James is going to do all of that. He's going to hog the minutes, the ball, and it's going to change everything.
The Twitch line and the text line, high usage, high flow of they want no part of James Harden. So look, we're crystal clear. We don't want James Harden. But I do think that this is a reason of why you take care of your stars. When the Rockets were trading James Harden, they catered to James Harden.
Sure,
James,
did.
Where do you want to go? Brooklyn, Philadelphia. Okay. Well, whichever one of those two gives us the best offers, where you're going to go. They treated him nice on the way out the door. A lot of people at the time, why are you doing that? He doesn't want to be here. Why are you taking care of James Harden? We know that the NBA is a superstar league. We know that teams cater to their superstars. The Rockets certainly catered to James Harden. The Rockets put themselves in a position where, look, no one wants James Harden back. At least we don't. Hopefully the front office doesn't.
You should finish that statement a little differently. Hopefully the owner doesn't.
Hopefully the owner doesn't.
Because I've heard the owner does.
Well, who knows? Maybe that is the case. But we don't want James Harden back. But the way that they took care of James Harden is why you take care of your stars. James Harden saying that he's willing to come back to Houston shows you that it's a good landing spot for stars around the league. That stars would be willing to come back to Houston because they know they're going to be taken care of. And a lot of old school people are like, oh, you don't want to take care of your stars. You don't want to do that because now the players are driving the bus, blah, 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 blah. in the NBA, where it's a superstar-driven league, you have to do that or you're falling behind everybody else. I take it as a good sign that Harden wants to come back to Houston, even though I don't want James Harden back.
I disagree with that, and I'm not, because I don't consider myself of the opinion of an old-school guy. I'm going to take it from an analytical perspective, and I'm going to say if you got the best years out of James Harden, it's the same way would we extend Kyle Tucker at massive amounts of money, or would we take a guy that's given you good years at a good price and suddenly he wants an astronomical figure and you say, you know what, I'm not willing to do that like the Astros have done. I think when you look at it, Rafael Stone handled it exactly how he wanted to handle it so that people will look at it the way you just said. But I think that that could be hindering to the franchise, because at a certain point when Harden was facing that opportunity where he said he wanted to be traded and wanting to get out, he has never come close to being the player he was with the Rockets. So his return on investment was never going to be good for the franchise or as good as it once was when he was a Rocket. So I don't care that he wanted to go to Brooklyn, because once you want out from my franchise, I don't envision a time where I'm going to want you back. And I don't think it's going to affect another superstar from coming here, because if the money's right or the situation's right, they're all going to want to come here regardless of how you treated James Harden.
But a lot of the places will have similar money, because, I mean, the max contract is the max contract, right? And if a player is not currently with you, even if a player's with you, you're limited to what you can give them. So
unless you sign him like at the end of the last year of his contract, and then as his team, you can give him the
Supermax. But every team's capable to do that. Every team's capable of doing that.
They can't give him the Supermax.
I think that they can.
No, the team that has your contract is capable of giving you more than whatever any other team can give.
I'm talking about every team that would trade for that player.
Oh, to trade?
Every team that would trade for that player can give you the same amount of money up to the max contract. So like, I think that we're looking too much as like the James Harden perspective of this. Where I'm looking at it is James Harden's a star in the NBA. James Harden, because the Rockets treated him well, is willing to go back to Houston. That shows you that stars in the NBA look at the Houston Rockets as a place that would be comfortable, a place that would be ideal, a place that's going to take care of their players and makes them attractive. And Houston being an attractive place in the NBA, I think that's a good thing. I want nothing to do with James Harden. As Battery Chuck says, I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. I wouldn't either. But if I look at this lead and I look at this headline, I'm happy that Houston is a place that a star in the NBA deems attractive.
But see, I look at it and say James knows that the one place that kissed his ass and catered to him more than anything else is where he wants to go back to.
But everybody in the NBA knows that. Everybody in the NBA knows they're willing to do that.
Since he's tried to get that same kind of treatment, he hasn't gotten it, and he also hasn't given them what he's given Houston in terms of how he played when he was here.
So you're looking at it from the Harden perspective, as opposed to a star wants to play in Houston because Houston treated a star well.
I think that the city, the weather, and the players around the franchise are going to speak more volumes towards getting a superstar that wants to come here, because in the past, we've gone through the gauntlet of Chris Paul's and Carmelo Anthony's the first time that they were trying to get him, and Dwight Howard's and all these other, and Westbrook and all these other players, and all, even LeBron, who eventually said, I'm not considering Houston, but at one point, even LeBron was considering Houston. I think that they consider so many things, and obviously the real estate costs and taxes and all that other financial stuff plays in too. But I think from a franchise perspective, if you have a warmer weather city and you have a culture for winning and you have guys around you that they want to play with, they'll come here no matter what. You can trade to get those guys, and you can get those guys anyway.
All those things play into the equation, but if James Harden was like, oh, Houston sucks, don't go there, I like it more that he's like that he likes Houston as opposed to saying bad things about Houston. Like, it changes the equation. That variable of players liking the city of Houston, it's good that this stuff is coming out that James Harden loves Houston, that he would be willing to go back to Houston, because the rest of the league is going to pay attention to that.
See, they do, but again, because it's James Harden and it's just such an isolating, polarizing figure. Because I can tell you that Chris Paul, who wanted to play here, will come right behind if they call more than one all-star and say, look, the reason why I didn't want to be there anymore is because of James Harden.
Right.
And all these other guys are going to tell you, hey, they kissed his ass so badly that we couldn't get what we wanted and do the things we could have done.
But Chris Paul probably wanted his butt kissed too.
Well, but Russell Westbrook,
and he did
the same way also, but they wanted him accountable. They wanted him held accountable the same way that they wanted the rest of the team accountable, and the organization wasn't willing to do that. So that's why when I say when you face a guy that comes into your office for as much as you've given him and he's given Houston, and he says he wants out, well, yeah, I could appease him and I could trade him to the two teams that he said, or I could change my franchise in a more positive way and impactful way by trading him somewhere else, by getting more in return that can make me better for a long period of time. And not, because in my estimation as a general manager, it's not going to affect if another superstar wants to play here. But if I trade him and get a couple of other really good players, maybe one of them turns out to be a superstar caliber player in return, even though it's not where James wanted to go,
sure.
I still can get another superstar that wants to come here. Right?
I feel like I feel like we're kind of going in the weeds here. Because the way I see it, it's maybe in a very simple kind of way, where there is a high-profile player in the NBA that played in Houston before that is saying good things about the city of Houston. The rest of the NBA is going to be like, oh, Harden, like, he likes Houston. I guess Houston's probably pretty good. Where if Harden was crapping on Houston, all of a sudden that's like, oh, I don't want to go there. And I think it does make you a more prominent team around league circles of being a desired destination. Like, I think the Harden part of this equation, because Harden's so polarizing and we don't want James Harden, that because it's James Harden, it's bleeding
it
in.
It mucks it up.
It mucks up the very simple, all-encompassing, like, top of the mountain of this whole conversation.
He's polarized himself league-wide across the board. If you're talking about an Olajuwon, if you're talking about, you know, guys that everybody kind of gravitates to and looks up to and respects, and they said, hey, Houston treated me right, then, of course, that's going to be from management and ownership to coaching and to the way the players, the amenities that they have, and then the city and the real estate and all those other things, then it's obviously a more attractive place to go. But I think that's why they always get a cross-section, because the one guy that got his butt kissed more than anybody else that had the keys to the franchise handed to him across the board is the one guy that damn well better say good things about Houston, whether he was traded to the team he wanted to go to or not. As opposed to the guy, if you get a Chris Paul that still talks great about the rest of the franchise, just says that, hey, it was one guy and it was his way over my way, then you understand, hey, Chris Paul will still tell you, hey, look, I love their amenities. I love their training camp. I mean, their trainers and their equipment guys and all the people in the surrounding jobs. It just was they weren't willing to give him the treatment of every other guy on the team, and I didn't agree with that.
713-780-ESPN. You're right. I mean, Harden's the black cloud that, like, is on top of everything that, as you said, though, I think you put it nicely, mucks it up. 713-780-3776. Every Wednesday at 2, it's in case you missed it. Stories we've been dying to get to, just haven't done it yet. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.